This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 27th of October 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 27th of October, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: calls to slash mileage rates, antiques market, new life as base for arts, and highways chiefs push back major motorway upgrade. So, Deborah, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Yes, it's called Calls to Slash Mileage Rates. Calls are being made for Winchester City Council to slash its mileage rates after it was revealed the authority is paying almost 50% more than the government recommended figure. Staff are currently pocketing 65 pence per mile for work-related journeys, 20 pence per mile more than HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, amount. Winchester is one of only a handful of councils in Hampshire to offer above the 45% mile rate. The figure has shocked City Councillor Martin Todd, who has described the authority's mileage rate as absurd. The Liberal Democrat, who is also a county councillor, said, "I've never claimed mileage and I'm really shocked by this. At a time when so many services are being cut, to pay that much in mileage is beyond belief. If Hampshire County Council and Eastleigh think 45 pence per mile is right, then I don't see why Winchester can't do the same." Despite the call to reduce the figure, Winchester City Council, who paid out more than £21,788 in mileage claims this year, says it is standing firm on its mileage rates. A spokesperson said, "We have no plans to change our use of a nationally agreed figure. The council reimburses casual usage mileage by the national rate set by the NJC, National Joint Council, for local government services, as do many other local authorities. NJC and HMRC differ on the actual cost of car usage. Staff will pay national insurance contributions and be taxed on the difference where appropriate." The spokesperson added, "We keep all terms and conditions under review, and any changes will always be part of a properly negotiated package, which helps to ensure that we can recruit the people we need to provide City Council services." According to data released by the Taxpayers Alliance, TPA, New Forest District Council also currently reimburses its staff by 65 pence per mile. Southampton, Test Valley and Eastleigh councils all pay the recommended 45 pence per mile, according to the pressure group. Meanwhile, Hampshire County Council says it pays the HMRC recommended rate. The figures come as part of a drive to get local authorities across the country to reduce their mileage rates. John O'Connell, Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Alliance, said, "Driving is extremely expensive in Britain, thanks to sky-high rates of fuel duty and vehicle excise duty, but there is no excuse for councils to pay more than HMRC's approved rate for mileage. It's simply not credible for local authorities to plead poverty and raise council tax while paying over the odds for basic expenses, especially when the government has been telling them to rein in on these payments. Councils must continue to root out wasteful spending like this so that they can deliver tax cuts for hard-pressed residents." The biggest spender in Hampshire was the County Council, who paid out more than £5 million in mileage claims this year. County Council Executive Member for Human Resources, Councillor Stephen Reid, said, Hampshire is the third largest county council in the country. It is 85% rural in nature and employs around 12,000 staff, excluding schools. Antiques Market, new life as a base for arts. The former Antiques Market in Winchester will be used for artistic purposes temporarily while Silver Hill 2 is in development. But the City Council says it intends to regain possession of the building on King's Walk by December 2021, as it is part of the area to be redeveloped. Architects JTP are working towards a draft supplementary planning document, SPD, for the Central Winchester area, due to be revealed on October the 30th. The Central Winchester Regeneration Cabinet Committee also heard about the possibility of locating 12 market stalls in the area between Marks and Spencer's and Sainsbury's on Middlebrook Street, and that proposals for pop-up uses on the land at the side of the bus station were to be explored. Expenditure of £25,000 for works to the former Antiques Market and a further £25,000 for a feasibility study for the refurbishment of Coitby House, which currently stands empty, were also approved. Work at the Antiques Market will include new lighting, the removal and replacement of floor tiles and treating damp. The meeting also heard that two floors of the offices above Poundland had been refurbished with one tenant, a Pilates studio, having begun to fit out one of the suites. Leader Councillor Carolyn Horrell says that it's important to explore uses for the area. She said it's about how do we improve the site, bring life to the site, which we have already done with the purchase of the bus station and the Friars Gate car park. Councillor Rod Humby said it's positive to move to improve the area while we make some of these large decisions. I very much welcome the paper.
Highways Chiefs push back major motorway upgrades. Improvements to tackle a major motorway bottleneck have been pushed back by more than a year after highways bosses admitted they cannot stick to the schedule. Junction 9 of the M3 at Winnall was set to undergo a £100 million road upgrade scheme where the M3 joins the A34 and A272. In March 2020. But now, Highways England has said it will be pushed back until mid-2021. In response to the delay, Winchester MP Steve Brine said he will be having a top-level meeting about the project next week and added, "It has to be right that it's done properly and Highways England spend taxpayers' hard-earned cash wisely." Alongside the M3 project, a major scheme to turn the M27 into a smart motorway and improve the A31 at Ringwood have also been pushed back. Highways England said the delays were to ensure that there were not too many road projects happening at the same time. A spokesperson added, "We have rescheduled the timing of some of these road improvements so motorists using motorways and major roads face the fewest possible delays. This will keep our roads moving and deliver a lasting legacy for the country." However, Jack Cousins, head of road safety policy at the AA, condemned the delays. He said, "The news will be devastating to drivers who use these roads on a daily basis. After suffering months, if not years, of congestion at these hotspots, they have had the hope of relief snatched away from them, at least for the time being." Catherine Turness, Executive Director of the Winchester Business Improvement District, added, "I think businesses, especially in Winnall, will be disappointed to hear of the pushback, as it's a major trunk road for their operations and, of course, a vital link. Councillor Rob Humby, Hampshire County Council's transport chief, said, "The motorway network in the south is almost at capacity, and while a delay in delivery could see rising costs, it does provide an opportunity for the scheme to evolve over time so that an even better solution can be provided."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements. Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. And then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Conway, Philip Conway, died suddenly in hospital, aged 77. Hobbis, Gwen Hobbis, who died peacefully at home after a long illness, aged 83. Large, Francis Barbara Large, who died on the 16th of October, aged 74. Palmer, Tony Palmer, died peacefully on the 18th of October. Russell, Mark Russell, died on the 15th of October, aged 45. And Simpson, Reginald Simpson, known as Roy, who died on the 10th of October. Now we've got Christian comment read by Albie.
Well, Christian comment comes this week from Rosemary A. Baker. "When we moved from Littleton to our new home in Dibden Purlieu in March of this year, after nearly 32 years, we had no idea what our new neighbours would be like. We had walked around the area, checked out doctors, dentists, vets and supermarkets, also churches, banks and the local library, but before moving in, we did not know what our neighbours would be like. We had been most fortunate in Littleton, living in a small road of kind, friendly, helpful people. Also, in our brief parallel sojourn in Cornwall, we had been lucky. Previously in Basingstoke, I had not been so fortunate, living next door to some neighbours who, if not the neighbours from hell portrayed in some television programmes, weren't far off, in my opinion. The problem was their teenage daughter and her non-stop, extremely loud music, and the fact that I was studying for exams. I tried reasoning with her father for a cut-off at 11 p.m, thinking I could study in the hospital library until then, but to no avail. Nowadays, we all know about the law and noise nuisance. Anyway, readers, you will be pleased to know that so far things have gone well. The lady on one side has been extremely helpful, and the empty house on the other side has been rented out to some people who seem very pleasant. This week is Faith in the World Week on BBC Radio. The various stations will be exploring the theme, Who is My Neighbour? What does it mean to be a neighbour? Do you even know who they are? Today our neighbours and neighbourhoods are no longer defined by the streets or places we live and work in. Affordable travel and technology means we can help, communicate and socialise with not just those living around the corner, but thousands of miles away. A poll by ComRes for the BBC revealed that people in Britain like their neighbours to be friendly, but also quiet. One in five says quietness is the quality most admired in a neighbour. Half of the 1,000 surveyed said friendliness was the most important quality, with 13% saying helpfulness. On another, perhaps wider front, this week is also One World Week. This year, it also explores the theme of being a good neighbour and concludes that it means more than just being quiet and unobtrusive. It includes, according to various faith traditions, actively looking out for neighbours to ensure their needs are met. This has applications at personal, local, national, and international levels, and for our world and its resources as a whole.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, a range of subjects. Deborah.
And the first one is from Roger Malin, and it's entitled Ugly Design. Sir, I accepted the development of Barton Farm and the attempts the developer has made to pacify the locals, but what is getting difficult to accept is the design of the houses and the layout. They're bland and austere. What do we have? Featureless red brick walls, plain grey slate ridge roofs, and simple austere windows set in houses that are laid out in regimented straight rows. Perhaps the inclusion of a couple of strategically placed trees might help. A five-year-old draws houses like them, and the last time I saw something as drab was in the late 1950s. That later became a modern-day slum, which was eventually demolished. If history is to be repeated in due course, the architect will get an award from his peers in an attempt to cover up his lack of vision and design. I realise that houses similar to this design concept have been built in Winchester city centre, and in small numbers surrounding other traditional buildings, they are acceptable and introduce the 21st century to the city. A touch of modernity, shall we say. But to build hundreds of them, all bunched together in straight lines across the open countryside, with no relieving features, beggars belief. I frequently walk across Barton Farm, and it is saddening to see such a bland development creeping relentlessly across the cornfields. And I do not envy the future residents who will have to live in this modern stalag. This development has taken the balance of function and design to about as far as the former can go. I appreciate that beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder and that design has to evolve, but I cannot help but think that future generations will not look at the designs and layout in this development favourably. Roger Malin, Goring Field, Tegdown, Winchester.
Poor signage, and this is by John Steele. Sir, having travelled for over 2 hours in order to visit Winchester Cathedral, I was astonished when leaving the A34 that there was no signs whatsoever giving directions to Winchester Cathedral. If you go to St David's Cathedral, there is directional signage in a 15-mile radius of the cathedral. Likewise with Llandaff Cathedral in Cardiff, Canterbury Cathedral, Wells Cathedral, etc. So surely the Winchester City Council could find time to erect signage for a very important cathedral for visitors to find their way around your city. Visitors who bring with them money that is used in the local businesses, thus providing a revenue stream. It was with luck that I found parking spaces for 1 hour by the Guildhall, but not one of those spaces had been allocated for disabled uses, and the car parks I passed did not indicate how close they were to the cathedral or that there were spaces for the disabled. Is it the case that Winchester City Council do not wish to have disabled visits, and that is why there are no parking spaces available for them? We had to struggle to the Guildhall to find out where the cathedral was and inquire as to disabled parking. The first we were given directions to, but the second question they could not give an answer. In the end, all was in vain, as the cathedral was closed for the presentation of the university degrees. Lovely city. Pity that the council has very little thought for the visitors who come. And that's from John Steele, Town Mill Road, Cowbridge, Glamorgan.
A letter from Ian P. Newbury under the heading Getting Worse. Sir, I am following up your article about residents needing protection from the increasing number of students in Winchester and their antisocial behaviour, October the 19th. In the years I have lived in the city, there has been an increase in student numbers and associated poor behaviour. We live near to West Downs campus, in a road where many buy-to-let landlords have allowed, through greed, many students to rent converted family homes without any regard for the effect this has on the area. Unfortunately, many of these students seem more interested in loud parties, even in the week, when people have to get up for work and school, than in being good neighbours. Drunken behaviour is frequent, as has been damage to vehicles on occasions. It is a concern to many residents, not only about the disturbance, but the negative effect it has on property values. The university management and the city council appear to have no interest whatsoever in addressing this, and should frankly both be ashamed of themselves. Is this because the university, ranking at 82 in the country, does not attract the higher calibre of student? Or is this just an example of general student behaviour on a wider basis? Both the university and the students' union about this. The university position was that they cannot really control this, which is frankly a pathetic response, and the students' union did not even reply, which speaks volumes. Something needs to be done soon, before there is trouble, which will be almost inevitable, and the deteriorating quality of life and attraction of Winchester forces residents to follow the example of many high street retailers and vote with their feet. The council and the university must address their separate yet collective responsibilities. It, as I said, was from Ian P. Newbury of West Hill Park, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Phil Yates, holding breath. Sir, Stoke-on-Trent, Paisley, Swansea and Coventry are among the nominees for the Cultural City of 2021. Winchester naturally does not feature in the list and will not feature in future lists unless the City Council and its architects get to grips with the redevelopment of Silver Hill. Now that the bus station has been revamped, you can see the vast space in that area alone, which could be developed into a cultural site by the erection of a modern museum and art gallery, the present museum being inadequate, and there is no permanent art gallery in the city. A concert hall is essential. Again, the city lacks such a venue, as both the cathedral and the Guildhall are not entirely suitable. An up-to-date three-screen cinema would not go amiss, complete with a cinema museum and a restaurant. The Woolstaplers Hall would make an excellent indoor market, substituting the street market stalls which take up too much room in the high street. What about a new bus station? At a previous public meeting with councillors and architects, it was suggested this could be sited in another part of the proposed development. Maybe, just maybe, if these comments are taken on board, Winchester could be in the running for the Cultural City of 2025. We live in hope. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Student plan. Sir, I refer to your article of October the 19th relating to the need for action over increasing numbers of students, in which the University Vice-Chancellor Joy Carter is quoted as saying that she does not think the city would notice her institution's expansion to 10,000 students. Really? Winchester population is 46,000, and the fact that over 10,000 of them are students wouldn't be noticed. Perhaps Professor Carter would take time out of her busy schedule to stroll around the Sparksford Road area adjacent to her university, where a chat with any of the locals would fill her in on some of the many ways in which her undergraduate charges are being noticed. Residents of Sparkford Road area include Millthorpe Lane, Erskine and Peninsula Road, Sparksford Close, Sleepers Dell Gardens and Wentworth Grange have suffered the increasing encroachment of the university and privately managed student accommodation for many years, and so fully empathise with the residents of Stanmore, Winnell and Wick as they come to terms with this major problem. In Sparkford Road, we endorse the Lib Dem councillor's view that Winchester City Council should put in place a plan to deal with the student accommodation in the city. Unfortunately, as a recent meeting of the council's planning committee made only too plainly apparent, planning is not their strong point. Indeed, the only plan appeared to be that there is no plan. I was a student once. I've nothing against them. And indeed, I have some sympathy for them, given the debts they are having to shoulder to further their education. However, in my day, how we were accommodated was highly organised and very well managed. Perhaps before expanding willy-nilly, Professor Carter and the council should give some thought to this. And that was from Michael Shaw of Sparksford Road, Winchester. And there is a picture accompanying it of the approved plans for student housing on Sparksford Road. It looks quite large.
Flood risk from Richard J. Bayliss of Chilcombe Lane, Winchester. Sir, I write with regard to the proposed move of the Sport and Leisure Centre to the Garrison Ground. To date, throughout the consultations, local residents have alerted the Winchester City Council of the water problems at the proposed site. Not only is the Garrison Ground a floodplain, but it is situated on a water table and hence cannot be drained. Local residents have consistently warned of the problem since the consultations began, but the council have pressed on regardless at considerable cost. It is apparent that the council wish to pursue their plan at all costs due to their alliance with Winchester University and their joint desire to build the Sport and Leisure Centre adjoining the existing athletics track. It would now appear that the council have commissioned their own flood assessment report, which confirms that there are problems with the proposed site due to ground conditions and that this will further increase the cost of the proposed building. Notwithstanding this, the council intend to persevere with a problematic site despite the fact that the current Sport and Leisure Centre at North Walls is a proven acceptable site. The proposed centre will only add to the water problems at the Garrison Ground, which will in turn affect the surrounding properties. The council are now about to embark on a plan to dig several exploratory trial pits and boreholes around the Garrison Ground, which will only confirm the existing problem. If the proposed Sport and Leisure Centre proceeds on this site, it will result in problems with the building and the surrounding properties, which in turn will lead to years of litigation. In addition, the Chesil Street Bar End area is ill-equipped to cope with the increased traffic that the centre will generate.
And the next letter is from Mrs. Pauline Spears, Hitting Powerless. Sir, I am disgusted to hear of County Council proposals to end community transport funding. Community services show we care for all members of society, not just the powerful, but the vulnerable and powerless. I recommended community buses when a community occupational therapist, and now, working with Eastleigh Borough and Romsey Mencap Society, I support members on outings to places inaccessible by public transport. Members attend an evening social club in Eastleigh, which is often the only opportunity to continue friendships begun at school and former day services. The club relies on the one community bus transport, giving their carers a night off. One community buses transported my mother-in-law to a weekly day centre, giving my dying father-in-law a much-needed break as her carer. A friend in Bishopstoke, who recently had a kidney removed, relies on the one community bus to do her weekly shopping. My husband is a disabled football supporter with disabled friends who attends Southampton games relying on one community buses. In all these cases, a fare is paid. There must be ways to fund this service. The huge number of new homes in the southern part of the county will bring new council tax revenue, or charge for Sunday parking, as Southampton does. Increase council tax. Charge for over 60s bus passes. As those using community transport have to pay, so why shouldn't other pensioners? I could go on. The Women's Institute 2017 resolution, paraphrased, raises awareness of the causes and impacts of loneliness and better identification of lonely people to offer them assistance and support. Removing community transport will be doing the opposite. Yet I believe the council has a commitment to ending social isolation amongst vulnerable residents. Holding the majority, Councillor Perry has carte blanche to vote through this cut rather than make changes that, whilst unpopular in the short term, will be barely noticeable long term. I implore him to search his conscience. Is this the kind of community that he wants to create and is intended to serve? Put the vulnerable first and think again. Mrs. Pauline Spears, Loxheath Road, Loxheath.
County benefit. Sir, I agree with Avril Burt, letters October 19th, on the folly of closing Andover Road, but suspect that her conclusion is 100% wrong. Far from being bullied by the developers, why would they want a main road through the middle of their development? Hampshire County Council are the main beneficiaries of the closure. This is because they are also the education authority, and it would be far easier to extend Henry Beaufort school site through onto Barton Farm without the main road being there. This has been raised before, and as far as I'm aware, Hampshire County Council have not denied it. And that was from Michael Keane, East Woodhay Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And the final letter comes from Larry Darmanin, Oak Road, Woolston, Southampton, under the heading Deal or No Deal. Sir, as the EU continues to be intransigent over Brexit negotiations, the British government should be fully prepared to walk away with no deal rather than agree to a bad deal. The government would certainly have the support of the British people. According to a new Sky Data poll, a large majority of the public believes that no deal is better than a bad deal. A massive 74% agreed the country should walk away rather than accept a bad punishment deal. Just 26% think any deal is better than no deal. As Justice Minister Dominic Raab has said, the UK must strive for the very best outcome from these negotiations, but prepare for all eventualities. BBC News, October 2017. It is worrying, therefore, that the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, has written in the Times that he will only spend money on preparing for a no-deal scenario just before such a scenario should arise. The responsible action to take would be to ensure that we are prepared for a no-deal scenario now and not wait until the last minute. We hope that the UK and EU negotiating teams will reach a deal that benefits both sides. Indeed, it is in their interests to do so. However, if we want to get a good deal, we have to be willing and able to walk away from the negotiations. If because of EU bullying, the UK and EU agree to a bad deal, then Britain will be saddled with the terms of the deal for decades.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we're going to step back in time. Deborah, you're going to take us back 200 years.
Yes, indeed. 200 years ago, Monday, October the 27th, 1817. Distressing event. We have the painful task of detailing the circumstances attending the death of a poor infant who was suffocated while employed in sweeping a chimney, at the perusal of which humanity will shudder. It presents another forcible argument in favour of the abolition of the cruel and disgraceful practice of employing human beings in this occupation, which can easily be effected by other means. On Thursday evening at 8 o'clock, an inquisition was held at the Lord Somers Arms, corner of Grenville Street and Union Street, Somerstown, before Thomas Stirling, coroner, on the body of Robert Dowland, a poor little orphan sweep, aged 11 years, apprentice to Hall, a nightman and chimney sweep, residing in St Pancras, whose death was caused by suffocation in the flue of a chimney. And the second piece, a public examination of the children instructed on Dr. Bell's system in this city will take place on Thursday and Friday next. At the annual meeting of the Hampshire Society for the Education of the Poor, the multiplicity of business does not admit of hearing more than the elder children. But on the present occasion, an opportunity is afforded for explaining the whole of the system and tracing its effects from the lowest to the highest classes. Such an examination is particularly useful for all who are really anxious on this important subject, and we have no doubt it will be fully and respectfully attended.
100 years ago today, a Saturday, the October the 27th, 1917, a meeting of the Hampshire War Pensions Local Committee was held at the castle in Winchester on Saturday afternoon, where the Mayor of Winchester was voted to the chair in the absence of the Earl of Northbrook. On the motion of Admiral Protheroe, the meeting passed the following resolution, that in the opinion of this local committee, delays occurred in the provision of a sanatorium treatment for discharged disabled men suffering from tuberculosis, and more sanitarium accommodation should be available for the purpose. That the Joint Disablement Committee be asked to take into early consideration the steps to be taken to provide the necessary additional accommodation, and to be taken to provide the necessary additional accommodation, and to consider whether it is desirable to provide a special sanatorium for this purpose with facilities for providing the inmates with light open air work. And the second article is, attention is called to the appeal which the Mayoress, Mrs. Alfred Edmeads, for Handkerchief Day on Wednesday next, October the 31st. Gifts of handkerchiefs will be received by the Mayoress at the Abbey House, or they can be left at Messrs. Teague and King's Music Warehouse, High Street, if preferred. It is hoped that a sufficient number of handkerchiefs will be forthcoming in order that the large numbers might be sent to the Hampshire and Rifle regiments at the front. It is also to the wounded on hospital ships and in casualty clearing stations. The effort is one that will undoubtedly receive much support if the date is not overlooked.
Now, one item from 50 years ago, Saturday, October the 21st, 1967. Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, MP for Winchester, is one of a small group of members of both Houses of Parliament visiting Vietnam. From Saigon, the group has flown to the war zone in the north to visit the large United States base at Da Nang, and has also visited Can Tho in the Mekong to see the pacification and rural development schemes which the government of South Vietnam is carrying out with American assistance. The group has also seen the Children's Hospital in Saigon, where a British paediatric team under the leadership of Dr. John Apley is helping to train Vietnamese doctors, surgeons and nurses in this specialist medical work.
And from 25 years ago, Friday, October the 23rd, 1992, there's two articles. At the annual meeting of the Winchester Music Society, the chairman, Mr. Percy Maidment, expressed sympathy for the 30,000 miners faced with redundancy, recalling with pleasure the music of the colliery bands and choirs. The cancellation of the October meeting because of a major electrical fault was explained and a letter of apology from Hampshire County Council was read. Members were reminded that in 20 years this was only the second time a meeting had failed to take place, and the first was because of heavy snowfall. Tribute was paid to Mr. Arthur Herriot, whose death during the year had been a great loss to the society. Mr. Herriot was an honorary member and had served for many years as opera and ballet secretary. And the second item, over 1,000 red helium balloons were released by Winchester schoolchildren over the city's cathedral on Thursday. The event marked the launch of the 900th anniversary festival, set to take place next year. On the command of town crier Alan King, some 1,300 children from 14 primary schools let go of their balloons outside the great west door of the cathedral. The festival commemorating the 900th anniversary of the cathedral begins next April and includes various activities such as concerts, exhibitions, drama and poetry. It's being organised by the Winchester 900 Festival Fund, which is also seeking to the active participation of local individuals and businesses in the newly formed Winchester 900 Club. Right, and now we move on to editorial comment. Deborah, please.
And this is headed Trying Times for Motorists in County. It's been a week of bad news for motorists in the county. £3 million road improvement schemes in Hampshire will be severely delayed after highways bosses admitted they cannot stick to their schedule. Highways England said that improvements to the M3 at Junction 9, the M27 Smart Motorway and the A31 at Ringwood will all be delayed from their original timeframes to avoid a clash with other schemes. The delays have been described as devastating for commuters by a motoring group. It comes just a day after the Chronicle's sister paper, the Southern Daily Echo, reported that two of Hampshire's busiest road bridges are in such poor condition that £20 million will have to be spent to save them. Transport bosses say without starting essential work on the Redbridge Causeway, heavy lorries may be banned from using it within a year. The scheme, dubbed the biggest road maintenance project in Hampshire's history, will mean major disruption for the tens of thousands of drivers who use it each day. Cars are a wonderful invention which should bring drivers freedom and joy. That's the theory. But sometimes being a motorist can also bring a world of pain. Let's hope there won't be another dose of bad news tomorrow.
Now we've got first person, please, Norma.
The Signs of Danger in Our Streets by George Hayter. Credit where it's due, I admit that I nicked the idea for this column from my son. Benjamin Hayter, BSc, was staying with us last month while he toiled over his postgraduate dissertation about the effects of buildings on street pollution. I looked over Ben's shoulder, but his calculations baffled me, and I'm not sure what conclusions his study will come to. But even I could understand his introduction, which summarises some recent research on traffic pollution in Japan and Australia. These overseas findings, it seems to me, could help pedestrians here in Hampshire to reduce the risk of lethal poisoning by exhaust fumes. The Japanese and Australian evidence seems to indicate that Jury Street, St George's Street and Southgate Street could be among examples of Winchester's roads posing a real threat to health. I'll try and explain. The problem is that cars and lorries running on traditional fuels emit nitrogen dioxide and other harmful gases. As well as that, microscopic lung-damaging specks called particulates are produced by diesels. Each year in the UK, the equivalent of around 40,000 deaths can be attributed to outdoor air pollution linked to exposure to the fine particulates and NO2, according to a report last year from the Royal College of Physicians. Excuse me. Researchers say stationary traffic is the worst for pollution, and that makes me think of cars and lorries frequently queuing in Southgate Street, Chesil Street and the Winchester one-way circuit. The drafts created by cars and lorries when they are moving have the effect of sweeping pollution away. Trouble is, when the traffic isn't moving, that doesn't happen. Some researchers have found that it's worth walking on the side of the pavement away from the traffic because pollution there is less dense. But wherever there is traffic, you are unlikely to breathe air entirely free of exhaust. Some streets hang on to the poisons more than others. The worst kind is Cannon Street. That is a street lined on both sides, uninterrupted by attached buildings, close to the carriageway. The resulting narrow canyon prevents the wind getting in and sweeping the exhaust out. In Britain, with its prevailing westerly wind, the Cannon effect may be most common in streets orientated north-south, such as Jury Street and Eastgate Street. The most unhealthy canyon is a uniform canyon flanked by buildings of uniform height, uninterrupted by open spaces or side streets to let the wind in. Uniform height traps pollution, but heights vary enough to include a few tall buildings tend to dispel pollution. Isolated tall buildings deflect any breeze at high level and cause strong downdrafts, which blow exhaust fumes away. You may have been buffeted by such downdraft if you have ever stood by a skyscraper on a windy day. You might feel that some nice green trees in the streets would generate a bit of healthy oxygen, but apparently trees actually add to the danger. All those leaves providing shelter from the wind that otherwise would blast away fumes. And perhaps that translates into bad news when we are on a rural roads hemmed in by hedges. Unfortunately, countryside doesn't always mean clean air when there's traffic around. This month, a study by the Barcelona Institute for Global Health claimed that children's intellectual development was hampered by air pollution inhaled on their walk to school. However, the Institute does emphasise that the overwhelming physical fitness benefit from walking still makes that a healthier option than travelling as an inactive passenger. Here is my advice to the public. If you find yourself embarking on a narrow pavement beside a roadway clogged with stationary traffic in a canyon street on a day with no wind, turn round and try and find another route.
And now Belgarm's alternative look at the news, Albie.
Yes, well, this week, Belgarm really does have an alternative look at the news, because the first article is supportive of two photographs, as opposed to the photographs being supportive of the article. And the two photographs are of a modern combine harvester and an ancient combine harvester. And they come under the heading, same field, same pose, 65 years apart. Two photos taken in the same place, one in 1952, the other 2017. Tony Atkinson, 72, has sent in the photos, both taken at Pitt. The 1952 photo shows Tony, aged 8, clinging on to the primitive harvester. And that's the one on the right of the article. And that was taken in August. The combine driver was George Yeomans, foreman, who worked for John Woodman, owner of Manor Farm, now the South Winchester Golf Club. Tony, of Chilbolton Down Farm, Stockbridge, believes the field belonged to Fred Freeborn, who lived in the White House near Yew Tree Garage. Very interesting article. The new combine harvester looks so different, so modern, streamlined compared with the old one, with a cabin which is completely enclosed for the driver, as opposed to the cabin on the primitive harvester, which was completely open to the elements. In the second article, the future is vegetable oil. You read it here first. Over 21,000 homes in Hampshire could be heated by vegetable oil within the next 5 years, according to a new industry report on the future of rural heating. Currently, oil heating is one of the most popular choices for those living off the gas grid, and a new report from Ofdec, the Trade Association for the Oil Heating Industry, suggests these homes could switch to a renewable alternative, such as a vegetable oil blend, by as early as 2022. This green biofuel could play an important role in reducing carbon emissions from these homes and provide a long-term sustainable solution for rural heating across Hampshire. Malcolm Farrow from Ofdec said, oil heating is incredibly popular in Hampshire due to its low price and flexibility. But we are all being encouraged to take steps to reduce our carbon emissions, and although it may sound strange, vegetable oil could be the key. Switching oil-using homes to a biofuel, which blends a small amount of kerosene with vegetable oil or an oil derived from waste products, represents the best of both worlds. And finally, the third item, 21st century management of the news. It's an unwelcome development. Senior city councillors no longer speak to the press. All calls are now routed through the council press office for a statement to be released. This follows the bureaucratic procedure at the county council. It means that portfolio holders are no longer available to be questioned on important issues. How does that improve things and the public's right to know?
Now we have the announcements, and we'll start with what's on. Saturday the 4th of November, of course, is the big bonfire night at North Walls Park. Saturday the 11th of November, there's a craft and gift market in the Guildhall between 10 and 4. And, of course, on Sunday the 12th of November, it's Remembrance Sunday, so there are services at churches throughout the city and a two-minute silence at 11 a.m. On Sunday the 5th of November, there's a concert in New Hall, Winchester College. It's Schubert Ensemble playing a concert of Schumann and Dvorak. For tickets or more information, telephone 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. And at the Theatre Royal, from Monday, October the 30th to Saturday, November the 4th, Noel Coward's Private Lives is on every evening at 7:30. And there are matinees on Wednesday and Saturday. The box office for the Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And just a reminder, some of you may not be aware, the new £10 notes are out and in circulation, the ones with Jane Austen on them. And they are very thin. They do get caught up in cash machines, so be careful that you do actually take them out if you're drawing from an ATM. And for you should also be aware, because they stick together a bit, in the top left-hand corner of the new £10 notes, there is one of the Braille-style raised bumps so that you can tell that it's the £10 note. The £5 note does not have that. OK, lighting up time ends on for the teamer now, looking at all the £10 notes. They're just going to look at mine, I think. Make sure I get that one back. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 27th of October at 7:49 a.m. and begins at 5:48 p.m. And on Wednesday the 1st of November, it ends at 6:58 a.m. and begins at 4:39 p.m. That's because the clocks go back this Saturday night, or Sunday morning, early Sunday morning. So clocks go back an hour this weekend. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. Continue with items of general news, Deborah.
The first item is entitled Trainee Priests Meeting. A new year of training for future church leaders in the Church of England has started at the School of Mission. Over 20 students who are training to be licensed Anglican ministers recently met at Wolvesey in Winchester for a study day. They're all students on the Winchester Licensed Ministry Training Programme, which provides training over 3 years in theology and ministry. This term, these three different year groups will be studying modules on the Bible, Christian doctrine and ethics, with their sessions led by experienced tutors. Reverend Paul Dunthorpe, programme leader for licensed ministry training, said how great it was to see all three year groups studying together on a Saturday with ordinands, that is, those training to be clergy, joining other trainees for the first time. It felt like the start of a new phase for the Winchester School of Mission, Paul said, with our learning community growing to a new level. Each call to ministry is unique, and students come from many backgrounds and from a variety of churches with a range of previous experience in the world and in the church.
Revealed, an arch of Alfred's Abbey. There were gasps of astonishment when the latest find from community archaeology digs were unveiled for the first time. Professor Simon Keynes of Cambridge University, flanked by David Sperling of Hyde 900, unveiled the finds from this year's Hyde 900 community dig in the King Alfred Terrace at St Bartholomew's Church, Hyde, last Friday. Revealed to an invited audience of professors, councillors and representatives of Hampshire Cultural Trust was a reconstruction of the 12th century arch from the cloister area of Hyde Abbey. The excavation, which involved more than 150 volunteers in April, had turned up the various components of the arch in an extraordinary half an hour period towards the end of a 3-day dig in the gardens of Chris Pryor and Justine Field. Because of the potential importance of the find, the wraps were kept on the discovery for 6 months for further research and to present the conclusive results in a striking setting. What we had unearthed was a series of beautifully carved voisseurs, wedge-shaped stones which make up the arch, together with a number of abacuses, square bases, placed on capitals, said Mr. Sperling. This was an astonishing enough in itself, but then the story became even more extraordinary when it was suggested by Dr. John Crook, the architectural consultant of the cathedral, that there might be a relationship between these stones and the celebrated capitals and Springer stone from Hyde Abbey, which are displayed in St. Bartholomew's. So we took an abacus and one of the voiseurs across to St. Bart's and compared their dimensions. They fitted exactly. In other words, we now had a complete matching set of capitals, abacus, Springer stone and voiseurs, which means we could reconstruct the cloister arches in exact detail. The significance was endorsed by Martin Biddle, the leading authority on Winchester's archaeology, who said, "These discoveries demonstrate the outstanding nature of the architecture of this hugely important abbey." And there is a beautiful picture of this, a third of an arch, which is supported by a perspex pillars. So you can see the carvings and all the detail in it. It's absolutely beautiful, really amazing.
Pig panage season extended in New Forest. Pigs will be allowed to graze the New Forest for longer than normal this year to protect ponies from a bumper crop of acorns. The Forestry Commission has announced that the annual panage season will be extended beyond the usual 60-day period until December the 17th. Pigs are allowed to roam the forest every autumn to hoover up acorns and other nuts that are poisonous to ponies. This year's panage period began on September the 11th and was due to finish on November the 12th. Now extended until December the 17th. The extension was confirmed at last week's Court of Verderers meeting in Lyndhurst by the Commission's most senior officer in the area, Deputy Surveyor Ruth Rothney. He said, "Oak trees have produced more acorns than usual, a mysterious event known as masting. It's a natural phenomenon that results in some tree species producing large crops of seeds some years compared to almost none in others. Most of the 600 pigs allowed to graze the forest each autumn are harmless, but a rambler was attacked by 4 young pigs last month. They charged at Paul Lipscomb as the retired photography lecturer, 64, strolled near Burley."
Council approved hedge destruction. The removal of a hedgerow which destroyed a colony of one of United Kingdom's rarest plants was approved by planning chiefs. Winchester City Council gave Pingleston Farm near Alsford permission for the grubbing up as the hedge did not meet criteria to be protected, but unsuccessfully urged the landowner to consider the impact it would have. The decision to amalgamate the two fields has affected the pheasant's eye, a distinctive red flower, and was made to allow a vineyard to be planted. In their decision notice, the council said, "Surveys and data analysis have indicated that the hedgerow cannot be considered important under Section 97 of the Environment Act of 1995, as it does not meet the requisite criteria for ecology or historic environment." But it added, "Given the number of woody species and non-woody species present in the hedgerow, the food source these provide, and the diverse habitat potential, it is highly unlikely that protected species are present in the hedgerow, although our survey was unable to collect sufficient evidence for the purposes of the hedgerow regulations. In addition to our concerns for protected species, the hedgerow also supports a high number of non-protected species, many of which are pollinators that the new vineyard would benefit from. In the 20th century, seed sorting techniques hindered the species' means of distribution, limiting them to isolated populations, and herbicides have further decimated numbers. Pheasant's eye all but disappeared from United Kingdom fields, persisting only in a handful of spots in southern England. One of these places was an arable margin bordered by hedge and woodland between Wayfarer's Walk and Oxdrove Way. There also grew a number of other declining species, including dwarf spurge, rye broom, and the last but one population of pheasant's eye in Hampshire, until the hedge was grubbed up this month. Pete Flood, local botanist, said, "It's tragic to see the loss of such prime arable margin habitat, and one of the best colonies of this exceedingly rare plant to be found anywhere in the United Kingdom. But I'm still hopeful that Natural England and the landowner can work together to repair the damage." Ben Robinson, agent for the landowners, declined to comment, but said that the landowners were aware of the Chronicle's report. In a statement, the council said, "As our officers were aware of the value of the biodiversity of the hedge, they searched the HBIC database and conducted a thorough on-site inspection to identify whether there were any species whose presence empowered us to preserve it. In this case, there was not enough evidence of these species to allow the council to insist that the hedge remains." And there are photographs with the article. One is of a vast empty field with a strip of bare earth where the hedge used to be, and in the distance, one lonely tree.
The new Barton Meadows Nature Reserve was the subject of the latest talk to the Winchester branch of the RSPB. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust Education Officer Susan Simmons spoke about its plans for the area being created for the displacement of wildlife due to the development at Barton Farm. The reserve can be accessed via Courtney Road to the north of Winchester, and there is only a track that goes round the fenced perimeter of what is agricultural land at the moment. With some 2,000 dwellings being constructed alongside this new reserve, it would be quite a challenge for the trust, the meeting heard. Some 33 hectares of farmland will be seeded to make a wildflower meadow to provide foraging and nesting material for birds such as skylark and grey partridge. Improved commuting habitat for bats and set up shelter woods for shelter wood piles for reptiles will also help to encourage pollinating species such as butterflies and bees. The creation of this wildflower meadow is a long-term project, and in time British white cattle and sheep will be brought in for grazing. An educational centre will also be built to encourage children from the nearby schools to learn about the reserve and the types of wildlife in their local area. Nature needs space, and by creating this new reserve, this will encourage the wildlife in time will settle into its new home.
Hillier's Haven is name of open space. A new green recreational space on the edge of Winchester has been named Hillier's Haven. Opening soon in Abbots Barton, it follows an investment of £100,000 by Winchester City Council. The council has announced it will be called Hillier's Haven, as suggested by local resident and Winchester Cub Scout Tom Duxbury, after he won a competition to come up with a good name. The previously inaccessible site, which is adjacent to the Hillier Way car park, will be developed into a natural recreational area for the enjoyment of local people. It is an integral part of the housing development project in Hillier Way and will also be home to the new 6th Winchester Scout Hut. Back in the 1980s, the land was an informal BMX track, but has been long overgrown. It will compensate for the loss of the open grassland being developed for council housing. Tom, age 9, who received Wonky Woodpecker prizes, said, "I live nearby and walk past the space for school and rugby, so I'm really excited about Hillier's Haven opening. I came up with the name because it is near Hillier Way, and chose Haven as it's somewhere to come to be peaceful and quiet. The new space has been designed by Winchester City Council's principal landscape architect, Claire Penny." She said, "Thank you to everyone who voted, and especially Tom, for submitting the favourite Hillier's Haven. We are moving forward with the project and are delighted to be able to provide these new facilities for the community. Hillier's Haven will feature paths through the woodland, a meadow area with stone fire pits, bird and bat boxes, a sculpture trail, and interpretation boards showing a map of the area and details of the animals and plants you might come across. Work is due to begin right away, with completion by the end of this year. The new site name will feature on the interpretation boards and at site entrance points. Hillier Way is one of the several sites being developed for council homes. The others include The Valley and Ashburton Road, Oldsford." And there is a photograph of Tom Duxbury with a big smile on his face and arms raised in the air in triumph, standing outside Hillier's Haven in Abbots Barton.
And the next article has got a photograph with lots of very jolly people. And it's entitled "Villagers Celebrate 25th Anniversary." Villagers celebrated the 25th anniversary of the opening of their community centre with an evening of entertainments provided by locals. Coldon Common celebrated the anniversary with a party, attended by many of the villagers who were at the opening in 1992. Maureen Rees, centre manager, thanked all who helped in the celebrations, including a team including Emma Cherrett, Leah Isaka, Vanessa Martin and other villagers for providing food. Entertainment was provided by the local amateur drama and music group, and individual performances by singers Jenny and John Sutton, dancers Anna Martin and Hannah Bogost, and jazz singer Leah Isaka. Also by Bert Simmons, saxophone, and Sylvia Mould, who were both involved at the opening events. There was also a display of memorabilia and a film of the original opening featuring Sir Patrick Moore, who contributed to the building of the centre. The evening ended with a retro disco presided over by Ben Reed. Coldon Common Community Centre was officially opened by the Duchess of Gloucester on October 1st, 1992, with the main hall, the Gloucester Hall, named in her honour. Many of the people who'd worked for years to fundraise, plan and build the hall attended the opening, including Michael Gaskell and Robin Werman, chairman of the Village Community Association and of the Appeal Fund, respectively, at the time. And as I say, there's a large crowd of villagers, ranging in age from young teenagers to obviously people who were there at the opening, and they're all smiling and waving lots of silver balloons.
Showing some spirit at cocktail contest. Bar and mixology skills were on display as Winchester Distillery staged the final of its cocktail awards. Held at the Forter Kitchens, judges Gareth Maxwell from Haltingley Valley, Gary Whitehair from the Cabinet Rooms, and Winchester Distillers Paul Bowler were treated to an array of mixing, stirring and shaking and flaming from the mixologists and the bartenders from the businesses around the county. These included the Chesil Rectory, Leinston House, the Langston Hotel, Hailing Island, the Cocoa Bar and Lounge, Southampton, Old Alsford Place, the Green Man and P.I. Woodfired Pizza. While picking out their winners, the judges were looking for specific characteristics, including concept, delivery, appearance, palette, and practicality. Paul Bowler, founder of the Winchester Distillery, said, "I was so impressed with the candidates' knowledge, skill, and imagination that it was a very close decision in the end. I am delighted with the level of interest in our spirits and our reputation within the hospitality sector." The competition's winners were Spike van der Meer, founder of a soon-to-be-launched pop-up bar company, and Chris Palmer, bar manager at the Langston Hotel, who judges felt excelled over the others in the cocktail and G&T rounds, respectively. And there are four pictures, the largest being of Carmen Darmanin preparing her River Arle spritzer using watercress syrup. And she's surrounded by herbs and lemons, and she is pouring, it looks like, tonic water into a glass. And then there is another picture of the judges, Gary Whittier and Paul Bowler from Winchester Distillery. And they have got a straw in the glass and are peering at it with great concentration. Then there's Damien Hines doing a spot of muddling for his Straight Roads and Bowler Hats cocktail. And finally, the competition winners, Spike van der Meer and Chris Palmer, with all the other competitors.
Now an article under the heading School Safety Campaign. Amean Valley Primary School held a Time to Shine Day to help raise awareness of and money for road safety. St John the Baptist School in Waltham Chase believe they may be the first to hold, with the police, a day combining the public message, fundraising and aerobics. With the help of the local police, pupil patrols ask parents to park sensibly near the gates, whilst others took part in aerobic sessions. Pupils were invited to wear their brightest clothes to raise awareness of the need to be seen by drivers. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, attended in his brightest regalia to judge the outfits. The school also received a cheque from Conrad Collins, Managing Director of Lockham's Construction, towards the purchase of road cones and road safety equipment. St John the Baptist School is already planning its next day of action for November to coincide with Road Safety Week. The scheme is called Police Apprentice, a youth-centred initiative where young people themselves create design and suggest ways to solve local issues. And there is a photograph which contains three of the young students in their brightest clothing, reds, pinks, orange, including hair ribbons, talking and explaining to a mum how best to park her car.
Poor motorway services. A survey has named the worst motorway service areas in the country, and three are in Hampshire. Rownham services southbound on the M27 came out as the third worst when Transport Focus surveyed customers at England's 112 motorway service areas. Rownham services northbound was judged to be fourth worst, whilst Winchester services southbound on the M3 was seventh. Heston services eastbound near Heathrow Airport came bottom and scored a customer satisfaction rating of just 62% in the watchdog survey. Rownham South scored 75%. Both Rownham services are operated by Roadchef, whilst Winchester South is run by Moto. Transport Focus surveyed 8,700 customers on subjects such as toilets, staffing and food at all 112 service areas in England between February and April. AA President Edmund King said, "We need to attract drivers to stop, as some 10% of fatalities on motorways are due to driver fatigue."
Bishop Consecrates Cemetery Extension. The planned extension of Winchester's Magdalen Hill Cemetery has been consecrated. The Bishop of Basingstoke, the Right Reverend David Williams, conducted a special service at the cemetery. The much-needed extension between the cemetery and Mourne Hill off Alsford Road will provide approximately 5,600 new burial spaces long into the future. The current cemetery was rapidly running out of space. It also includes the planting of memorial trees and features memorial benches. The new extension will have areas for Muslim and Gurkha faiths, as well as a plot for travellers to reflect the diversity of the district. The Church of England, Catholic and Free Church areas have also been extended. Consecration is the setting aside of land or buildings for sacred use in perpetuity. The consecration of a church or a burial ground can only be undertaken by a bishop. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for the Landscape and Open Spaces, said, "I'm delighted that the council is committed to extending Magdalen Hill Cemetery. We are devoted to maintaining the rich diversity of the district, and to do this, it is vital that we have burial space for all faiths." Susan Crocker, head of burials at the council, added, "It is a wonderful investment in burial plots by the City Council, which will support the residents for many years to come. The new area will feature ecological enhancements such as tree planting and landscaping. A designated butterfly conservation area is also included. The cemetery is next to the Magdalen Hill Reserve, run by Butterfly Conservation. The cemetery extension will be officially opened next spring." And there is a photograph of the registrar, Sue de Candol, burial manager, Miriam Baxendale, Bishop of Basingstoke, the Right Reverend David Williams, and Winchester City Council Cemeteries officer, John Rogers.
Charity Christmas card shop opens. Charity card organisers Pam Christmas, what a wonderful name, and Kathy Wallace are making final preparations for the start of the annual Christmas card market, which opens at Winchester Tourist Information Centre today. The Winchester Combined Charities Christmas Card Market has been running for over 30 years. This year, more than 50 charities will benefit from selling their cards to local people as well as tourists who pour into Winchester for the annual Christmas festivities. The Unusual Retail Project is a huge volunteer-run event. I think what most people... I think what people like most about the charity card market is that all the money raised goes directly back to the charities involved. We offer a massive choice of cards in one place, and because there are no middlemen in the sales chain, it's a very good way of raising funds for local organisations, said Cathy. The shop is run at Winchester TIC and is open Monday to Saturday until Saturday, December the 16th. And it's open from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. There's a photograph of those two ladies, Pam Christmas and Cathy Wallace, looking very pleased with themselves.
I've got a photograph here of Sir Richard Branson, and he's sitting in the driving seat, waving merrily, and he's on board his Voom bus, which visited Winchester to give out business advice and find budding entrepreneurs. And the article goes on to say, the United Kingdom's first jewellery rental subscription service has been crowned the Winchester winner of a national pitching tour. Glitz Box, founded by entrepreneur Tamsin Gordon, was selected by judges at the Virgin Media Business Voom pitching tour to take home the £5,000 prize and meet business guru Sir Richard Branson. Described as Netflix for jewellery, Glitz Box allows customers to try a new piece of jewellery each month before deciding to either return it or buy it. Following her win, Ms. Gordon said, Voom is such a great initiative for people like me who are diving in at the deep end on their own. I still work a 35-hour week as a freelancer, so this lump sum will allow me to dedicate some time to focus solely on my business. Winchester was chosen as the only city south of London for the Voom tour, and Winchester City Council worked with Virgin Media Business and Hampshire County Council to ensure that the sessions on the bus were tailored to the needs of the entrepreneurs in the city. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, said, the Voom tour is one of the many ways that Winchester City Council has shown its commitment to taking an entrepreneurial approach to public service in line with its council strategy. It is so inspiring to hear these young people talking about their new ventures with so much passion. Another pitcher, James Brewer, 26, from Winchester, also took part. His business, TOG, is an online platform that connects the work of aspiring artists to a community of buyers and galleries from around the world. Mr. Brewer said, I'm humbled to have been part of the process. And there's a second photograph of Tamsin Gordon, the winner, and the mayor, and it reveals the fact that the Voom bus is painted a bright, shocking pink.
Big success for Alsford Apple Day. An estimated 600 people attended the Rotary Apple Day in Alsford. Hundreds of apples weighing over a ton were crushed and pressed to be turned into apple juice for sale. The event in its third year was held in the car park at Perrin School, as it has outgrown the car park at Albury Park. It was bigger than before with a number of new attractions. Sunhill Infant School held a decorated apple competition, as well as its PTA selling cakes and chocolate apples. The head of the RSH Fruit Group, Jerry Edwards, helped the public identify their apples, and Sparsholt College were also there with their college fruit collection. For children, Mr. Applehead was there, as well as face painting, apple bobbing, and entertainment from local guitarist Stuart Walker, and juggling Jake, the children's entertainer. Next year's event will be on Sunday, October the 7th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on the same site. Interest in apples have grown rapidly in recent years. National newspaper reports at the weekend suggest that the headlong extinction of hundreds of varieties has been stemmed. Public interest has enabled experts to analyse many more varieties and take grafts to ensure there is survival. Scores of community orchards are being planted, partly reversing the loss of traditional orchards back in the 60s, 70s and 80s. And there's a picture of a smiling John Pittman, a Rotarian, and Ian Swan loading apples into the apple crusher.
And a final article, Big Boost in Red Admiral Butterfly Numbers. One of the UK's most striking and widespread butterflies, the Red Admiral, has experienced a record summer despite soggy weather conditions causing problems for other species, results from the big butterfly count have revealed. The Red Admiral saw its numbers rise by 75% compared with 2016, with more than 73,000 seen during the count's 3 weeks recording period. Excuse me. This number is as many as were counted in the last 3 years of the big butterfly count put together, and the highest number by far for the butterfly since the project began. But wet July and August weather meant that 2017 was not a vintage summer, with the UK's three common species of white butterfly all experiencing declines. The Admiral boom was helped by a good year in 2016, followed by a mild winter and warm spring this year. So that concludes our extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.